Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome back to the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, smack bang in the middle of the 2016 Rio Olympic Games. If you're listening to this as we release it, I hope you're enjoying the games. And recording this just hours after South Africa's Chad Laclos finished fourth in the 200 meter freestyle with Michael Phelps. One thing I have learnt is that shadow boxing is not particularly a great warm up for your butterfly. What it does do is it's great for motivation, not necessarily yours, but for competitors. So if you want to fire your competitors up, do some shadow boxing before your next swim, okay? Or maybe not. I think the less said about that, the better. Well, it's good to have you on. Thanks for joining us today. Before we get into today's guest, we're heading to Sydney, Australia, by the way, to catch up with someone who's not necessarily Australian native. They're from Estonia. It's the first Estonian we've spoken to on the Kona Edge, but we'll have more about that in a moment. Just a quick heads up, the 2016 IM Summit has concluded and it was super, super successful. If you did join us for some of the sessions, thank you very much. If you'd like to find out more about it, if you'd like to purchase access to it, you can. All you have to do is head over to theimsummit.com. And also don't forget, we're still giving away that entry to an Ironman race. All you have to do is leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'll put all those into a hat at the end of the year. We'll pull one out, and I'm going to be paying for someone to do an Ironman race. So I got a great review in from the other world inside this one in the Netherlands. Thank you for your review, saying one of my favorite podcasts on iTunes. Great applicable advice and a great balance of male and female guests as well, which I love. And we love you. So thank you very much for that review. 5 stars. Head over to iTunes to search for the Kona Edge. Leave us a rating, a review, and then make sure you head over to thekonaedge.com/win to find out how you can be in the mix to win that entry into an Ironman race. But enough about me waffling on. Let's get straight into today's guest. And it's a great pleasure to welcome age grouper Sydney, Australia, Lillian Molesworth, onto the podcast today. Well, we head to Sydney, Australia now to catch up with age grouper Lillian Molesworth. Lillian, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Lillian, let's take a step back and chat a little bit about your journey into triathlon and particularly the ultra side of things. Where did you start in triathlon? Have you always been a triathlete or did you come from another sporting background?
No, I was a runner before. I started triathlon in 2005. Reason why I started, I was getting way too many injuries with the running. And yeah, then I started doing triathlons.
It's quite interesting you say you started because of the injuries. It's so often that's the case that many age groupers almost stumble into the sport because they are runners and struggle with injury. Was it frustrating as a runner knowing that you couldn't always do what you wanted to do? How difficult was it to overcome that?
It was difficult, but at the same time I was enjoying it. So I was enjoying cycling and I was enjoying swimming. So it came sort of easy.
Growing up as a kid, were you always active?
No, not at all. I started, like, my background is Estonian. I grew up in Estonia, and like back then, we didn't have computers or anything, so I was just mainly always outside riding my bike, running around. Yeah.
Do you think kids today miss that? I mean, I grew up in the same sort of way. Like, I mean, we didn't have PlayStations. We knew it was time to come home when it was dark.
Yeah, so.
Lillian, looking at the making the step up to the ultras, I mean, from a sporting perspective, running and that, were you doing longer stuff or has that mainly come in triathlon where you've moved on to ultras?
I was running marathons, half marathons, 10Ks. That was my favorite distance, so half marathons, 10Ks, marathons.
The decision to make the step up to doing an Ironman?
When I watched in the video, I thought, oh yeah, I would like to do that. Give it a go.
was it as hard or as easy as you thought it was going to be?
I thought I'd put all the efforts and training in and see how I go.
When did you realize you were pretty good at it?
It was 2005, and then I just did first, like, I think was I did Grinnell race, then I did Nepean race, then I went straight 1.5, and then I went straight to full. So, and now I've done more full Ironmans than I've done half. So
that's quite a big jump. And quickly, would you advise that for new triathletes, or would you advise someone start slower?
Depend what level they want to do it. Like, I mean, you got 17 hours. Anybody can finish in 17 hours. So depend how, like, what level you want to race with. So if you want to be doing quicker, so take your time and train for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that 17-hour cutoff, if you put your mind to it, anyone, like you say, anyone can really do it. And I think that's what makes the sport really amazing.
Yeah, because 2005, when I started, it was only 15 hours and you have to qualify it. And I like back then, days you have to qualify it. It was like the field was a lot stronger. Like now I find it's a bit weaker. Like anybody can do it.
Do you think, I mean, it's interesting, we chatted a couple of weeks ago here on the podcast about the qualification and whether people should have to qualify, not necessarily just for Kona, but to do an Ironman. I mean, to go and do a 3.8.
I reckon they should. I reckon they should, because when I'm looking back now, like how many people just jump in and doing Ironman, and, you know, quite few often they're getting like heart attack. Maybe they should qualify first.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, a 3.8-mile swim is a long way to swim, and there's no way really for the organization to check if someone is competent for that swim. I understand the wave starts and safety, but I agree. I think a qualification process might actually alleviate some of those problems.
Yeah, definitely.
Lillian, as a kid growing up, were you pretty competitive? I mean, you said you were fairly active. Did you hate losing?
I was always good with the longer distance. That's why I didn't like the short distance. Like at school, carnivals, like always I can beat another girls without no training, which I was loving it. So yeah, I hate losing. Yeah.
Do you think that's important to be a good age grouper, is you've got to have that competitive streak?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Has it gotten worse as you've gotten older? Do you find you're more competitive now than you were growing up?
Oh yeah. I think because I've been getting a lot fitter, and I think I find like lots of guys actually try to beat me, and actually that makes me angry. Like, I don't like it.
I love that. Yeah. Nothing like a bit of motivation. I mean, obviously that fires you up. Where else do you sort of get inspiration and motivation from?
I don't know. Just watching the races and watching the results and thinking, oh, yeah, I can do that. And yeah, I can do that level. And yeah, I mean, my husband races as well. And he done Kona as well. Like he did 2012. So our aim was to race there together, but we never made it together. So
I was about to say, right. you married to an Ironman as well, and a pretty competitive one. Do you find that you guys race each other? Is it difficult? I mean, is it something you have to avoid, or do you push each other really hard?
No, we train separately, and when even race day, we sort of like stay each other's out of each other's way. I think we both get nervous and agitated, so it's better we stay each out of each other's way. And because the same thing with the work, like he can train that time and I can train that time, so even training we train separately. So,
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think sometimes maybe bad things, because sometimes he complains. Is it? You can fit in all this training and I can't. So, yeah, it's hard.
How do you deal with pre-race with the two of you? I know, I mean, something my wife struggles with, because I get pretty grumpy in the final week before an Ironman. I get quite nervous as well. How difficult is that to manage where both of you are racing the same race?
I think because we raced already that many races, we stay pretty much calm. Or if I can see he's getting a bit agitated, I just stay away. So I just do my own things, and I pretty much know what is his routine, and he knows what is my routine. So we try to not interrupt each other.
Let's talk about your sort of qualification process and when you decided, you know what, I'm pretty good at this Ironman thing. I want to give it a go to see if I can get to Kona. When did you realize you were pretty good at Ironman?
I think with my first race. Yeah, when I did my first race, it was Port Macquarie, and I did 11:47. That was my first Ironman. And I didn't want to do straight away Kona. I thought, let's try. If I can do it, sub 11 hours. And then I was training hard. And then I thought, I think I can do Western Australia sub 11. So I was training really hard. And it was, that was 2007. And exactly 4 weeks to go. And then I came off the bike pretty bad. So I had fractured ribs, fractured tibia, fibia, sacrum fractured, elbow fractured. So basically, I couldn't do nothing. And everybody said, look, your chances are gone. You can't do it. And day before, I didn't even want to go and try to swim or run. I knew it, like, I'm going to be sore. It's been only 4 weeks. On the race day, I thought, all right, adrenaline got a kick in and I just got to go and do it. So on the race day, the adrenaline kicked in and I did it. I did 10:52. Well, but I was sore.
I was going to say, how long after the crash was that?
Exactly 4 weeks.
No ways. That is crazy. What drives you to do it? I mean, you'd obviously done lots of hard work in the build up to that. I mean, what drives someone to actually go after a crash like that, to go and give it a bash?
I think inside me, I was angry. I was angry because people said, you can't do it. You'll be lucky to walking it. You'll be lucky you're going to do TNF. And inside me, I was angry. I thought, why would you say to me that? And I felt like I want to improve that I can do it. And when I was running, I knew it. I can't stop. I can't stop and have a drink. My legs just kind of cramp up so badly. I just have to keep going until I see my finish line. So I did it.
That's incredible. You've obviously got this massive inner strength, because I mean, when you're fit and strong and pushing hard in an Ironman, it hurts and you end up in some dark places. But in that situation, you must have been in all sorts of pain. What sort of strategies do you use to push yourself through those times where you're really, really struggling in a race?
I sort of like switch myself off and I just focus finish line and like, take one step at another step, like focus, okay, I got to get this point to the next aid station. Not to stop, just to have something quickly, energy gel, go, water, keep going, keep pushing. And only time I'm going to stop if I cross this finish line. So I'm not going to stop until I cross that. So sometimes I even don't recognize people who are cheering me on because I'm so switched on, like, and just focus this finish line
in the zone. That's amazing, Lillian. As far as in pain in a race, I mean, have you been that sore in a race or after a race since then?
That race I was like, really sore, like I couldn't even walk. But all rest of the races, it's been pretty much all right.
It's been pretty good. Let's talk about choosing courses. And you mentioned Western Australia. I mean, it's pretty fast and flat. How do you go about picking the courses you want to race? Do you find races that suit you? Do you prefer the fast, flatter ones, or do you prefer the hillier, harder ones?
I like hilly and harder one because I find for me it was easier to qualify hilly courses. I find hills actually suits for me. So everybody can ride flat and fast. If you want a fast time, go Western Australia. But if I wanted to qualify for the corner, was Port Macquarie the way to go?
It's interesting. And people would often think that it's the other way around, that it'll be easier to qualify on a faster flat course. But as you say, that's not necessarily the case.
Hard and hilly ones, best for me,
Brilliant. Lillian, let's talk about actual qualifying and the first time you qualified for Kona and that feeling. I mean, you've obviously set goals of what you wanted to do, but when you set the goal that, you know what, Kona is where I want to get to, how does it feel once you've actually done it, where you've realized, you know what, I've booked my ticket, the slot's paid for and I'm going?
The qualified was pretty hard because all my rest of the races, I came pretty close and I missed like twice. I missed by one. And that day I was just my lucky day.
how much luck does come into it? I mean, we know how much hard work goes in, but how much do you need things to align and go your way?
It just have to be perfect day. And I had a perfect day. So I can say, just luck. And really depend who turns up.
Let's talk the sort of build up from qualifying to Kona. Do you change much? Do you try and keep things much the same, or do you change things up and heading to Kona slightly different?
I changed everything around. I used to cycle like heaps. I used to do like 500 k's a week, and I used to run a lot as well, like 100 k's plus. And then I thought, I'm going to cut off all these junk miles and I just going to focus on speed. And that's what I did. My cycling, if I tell the people how much I cycled, they say, think you're crazy. My longest ride was only like 3 hours, but I train only on the wind trainer. And if I do 3 hours, it's flat on 3 hours on the wind trainer and that's it. And the same with running. I didn't run no more than 30 Ks, but the 30 Ks, that would be like, 2 hours. And 12 minutes, and that's it. I won't run anymore. So I was purely focusing on speed. So I cut it off all the junk mile, and that's got me where I wanted to be. So
it's interesting. What was it? What made you make that switch? Talk to me about the thinking behind making that switch.
Because I find when I was training before, I struggled with the time, like quality time, spend time like with my husband and family, and I was drawn away from that, especially from friends as well, and doing that long. And then I thought, no, I think I can change around. Like, I don't need to do necessarily these long rides all the time, because losing endurance will take 6 months for me to losing endurance if I don't do anything. But losing a speed will take 2 weeks. So I thought, well, I'm going to focus only on speed. So, and that's what I did.
Do you think that would apply to most age groupers, or is it a case of each to their own? They need to figure out what works out for them.
I mean, if they've been in the sport for longer, like me, I reckon they only need to focus on speed. They don't necessarily need to go and ride all these long rides all the time. Like, even my last Ironman, I did faster than year before, and my longest ride, the same thing, 3 hours only, and that's got me through.
That's amazing.
And the same still. My longest ride was 3 hours, and I still ran off the bike marathon. I did 3:36. I knocked another 2 minutes off my marathon time. So, and my longest run was only once 30 Ks. That's it.
Wow. Talk to me about your experience on the Big Islands. The feeling of hopping on the plane. It's a long way to go. But once you arrive there, what's going through your mind?
A lot, because I lost my bike. I mean,
oh no!
I put my bike on in Sydney Airport, and airline company lost it somewhere. So I was pretty nervous. I didn't have my bike for 5 days. So all I was able to do, run and swim, and then 2 days before the event, I got my bike. So it was a nice feeling.
That must be pretty stressful.
Yeah, it was. It was very stressful.
I had a similar experience, although didn't lose the bike. I lost the bolt for my seat post on my bike I did Ironman Zurich a couple of years ago. I lost it. I left it at home. And it's quite a unique little fitting thing. And we could not find one. So we had to jimmy the thing. But I know it's pretty stressful not having the gear that you used to when you arrive at race day. The build up to that Kona, the time that you spent on the Big Island before you raced, I mean, were you pretty comfortable that you had spent enough time there? You'd acclimatized. What did you do to make yourself feel at home?
I usually race pretty well with the heat, so I went just there 7 days before the race, and I run, and I was able to hold the times what I wanted to hold with my training, runs, swim. I swam and I was feeling it good. So, yeah, I was happy because, I love running in the heat. So, and usually I train in the heat anyway, because the only time I can train is middle of the day. So it's the heat really didn't bother me. But what really killed me was the wind, because, on the race day, I was only, 52 kilos. And with my bike, I was still under 60 kilos. So the wind, absolutely destroyed me. And top of that was I didn't get the sunscreen, because when they put my number on, they said, don't put any sunscreen on until you're coming out of water. So I came out of water I was looking sunscreen, no sunscreen. I'm already hopped on the bike and I still no sunscreen. And I didn't get sunscreen until up to, what was it, about 120, 130 Ks. I stopped few of the aid station and they didn't have until another guy saw me at the aid station on radar was, and he just grabbed sunscreen out of his own bag and he just sprayed it on. But I was already by that stage so cooked.
Wow.
It was just, yeah, I was like lobster. I blistered it up and I was so much in pain.
I was going to say, that's good motivation to get off the bike and off the run as quick as possible. But sometimes that's not possible.
Yeah.
Lillian, your experience of that race, when you line up, when you get in that water and you look around and it's the best in the world, it's the who's who as far as the pros go, but it's also the who's who as far as age groupers go. What does that feel like, knowing that you've done the work to get here, you're with the best in the world, and you are one of the best in the world, and you get to test yourself against them on such an incredible course?
Yeah, it's a great feeling. Definitely, I will do it again if I can. And I will be more smarter. So yeah,
great. What would you change if you go back?
On sunscreen, I will put sunscreen in my own swim bag. Like, I mean, in the bike bag when I come out of water, I will have my own sunscreen, and I will put in the bike bag as well. Like when I hop on the bike, that I have in my pockets as well.
and race experience wise, what would you change?
I will keep everything the same. Like training for Kona, for qualifying race, my longest ride was 3 hours. Training for Kona, my longest ride was 5 hours. So I will keep it the same.
It's pretty interesting. And your race itself, I mean, other than the sunscreen issue, I mean, are you pretty satisfied that you did all you could? You left it all out there. There's no regrets?
Like, I was hoping maybe likely quicker time, but it was my first experience. And I thought, oh, well, I'll be happy to finish. I finished in 12 hours, 12 minutes. And I knew it, I couldn't go any quicker. But then I'm thinking, oh, well, if I had sunscreen on, maybe I would have to find somewhere another hour. But I don't know. I think I would like to go back and find out about that.
I guess that's one of the things about Ironman, is because it's such a long race, there's always things that you think, and it's not necessarily major things, but there's always things that can go, that you think can go better. It's very difficult to have the perfect race where everything goes according to plan.
But yeah, I think for my sake, that the wind, like I looked at people who went past me and they're like a lot bigger built than me. And I'm thinking, maybe that's why I struggled so much as well, because riding against the wind, like wind was 60 k's per hour, and then you got the heat in the lava fields. My Garmin said 48 degrees. I mean, how much better I can get to race in that condition? So I'm just happy to finish.
Aren't you glad you get to train in Australia as well? Imagine the guys and girls who have to train through pretty cold conditions and aren't used to that sort of heat. It does definitely help coming from a warmer country.
Yeah, definitely.
Lillian, as far as the quest to go back, I mean, now that you've experienced it and you've raced on the Big Island, how much does that eat at you that you know, like every time you race, you know what the prize is at the end of the day and how hard it is to qualify? I mean, is it difficult or is that what motivates you?
No, I think it motivates me. When I'm looking like now what race to do next season, I pretty much look and I thought, oh yeah, I can do it. The training I'm doing, yeah, I can get through. So before I was looking like, to training, how much optimum training I can do, how much training I can do. But now I'm focusing on the minimum amount of training what I can do to get through that race or get the fastest speed. So, yeah.
What's the biggest life lesson Ironman triathlon's taught you?
For me, definitely the sunscreen. If I miss the sunscreen, basically the race, like, going to be no good. I think because I'm so fair skin, and if the sun going to burn me, it's just bad. But I know I can go through the distance, but if the sun burns me, like the blisters are up, it's just, yeah, sunscreen, definitely.
it's interesting you say that, because people would think that something like sunscreen is such a small thing, but if you don't take care of the small things, the big things don't take care of themselves.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
If you could go back and give yourself advice starting out on this triathlon journey, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself?
I'm not sure. I'm just enjoying it, and yeah, just everybody, yeah, go for it, go and get the experience.
It's an incredible sport, and it's growing, and that's one of the things that I've noticed is the sport is just really, really exploding. If you could give sort of new people advice about doing their first Ironman, because we've got quite a few, there's two sort of separate audiences almost that listen to the podcast. It's the guys and girls who have qualified and are really trying to qualify, but then we've got a lot of novices and people starting out in the sport. What advice would you give to newbies about doing their first Ironman?
Probably the training, the consistencies. You have to be consistent with your training. Not just, oh, let's miss there a little bit, let's miss there. It's all adds up. Even like if you can't fit in like 4K swim set, do it 1.5. It's better than nothing. So, yeah, just consistency.
I love that. Lillian, we're going to get you back on to talk about the different disciplines and what you've done to improve on each one of them, but we'll save that for another time. Thank you for your time here on the Kona Edge.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.